Luka Doncic was good enough this past season to draw questions about whether he was the best player in the league, and the Mavs executed a hell of a game plan organizationally. Welcome to the Fantasy NBA Today podcast, a sports ethos presentation hosted by yours truly, Aaron Bruschi, and FSWA Hall of Famer Steve Dr. A. Alexander. Tomorrow we're covering the Boston Celtics and wrapping up our season in review series, but today we want to give the Dallas Mavs their celebratory Bud Lights, or whatever Luka drinks over there. Make sure you take a look at these written companion pieces on these teams that we're covering here on the pod. They go into great detail, and as I've said a million times, I believe you could win your leagues if you simply read these at the end of every season. Do your work while everybody else is sleeping, folks. The Dallas Mavs piece will be done by Mark Camaro, and he's one of the best in the business going. I said that yesterday. I want to say it again today because he just works his butt off, and I really respect that. So BetOnline is your number one source for all of your sport betting needs this season, from baseball to golf, soccer, right, to all the top fights in UFC, MMA, and boxing. Every stat, every matchup, and even live odds and spreads while the games are being played. When the game's over, head on over to our online casino and get in on a game of blackjack or poker, or unwind with one of our over 150 slots. Head to the website today to get in the action. Use promo code BLEAV for your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, the game starts here. I like calling you the Luka Whisperer, Doc, because I think it would kind of be lazy to call you a Luka apologist, even though I think you clearly root for him. I feel like you've been substantially ahead of most people on how quickly he would be as good as he has been. And, you know, everybody's been on that ride. But I really think that's the toughest place for an analyst to be, is everybody knows somebody's like a thing and they kind of just say, yeah, he's a thing. But then they don't get out on the edge and get aggressive about how good they really are. And I think you've been on that edge, you know, just ahead of everybody in that place where it's not quite so safe. So I think you're really uniquely positioned to answer this next question, which is, what do we see from him next season as a specific response to this playoff run we just witnessed?
Well, hopefully we see a guy that is not crying to the referees after every single play. For starters, that would be nice, and that would help a lot of things, I think. And then hopefully we also see a healthy player that plays defense and moves his feet like he did through, you know, much of the season. It really got exposed, you know, at the end of the playoffs when things were not going well against the Celtics and people were cutting together these highlight reels of him just getting blown by time after time again. Looked like he wasn't making the effort defensively, which I agree. It's a bad look. The optics are bad. But I think people are forgetting that the guy is hurt. He was getting pain-killing injections in his chest just to be able to play. I think there's a lot of players in the NBA that would not have played through the same thing that he had going. These people that are like, oh, he's nothing more than Trae Young. He's never going to play defense. He's never going to learn. And his teams are never going to win. I think that's ludicrous. I think it's crazy to think that. And I think he's going to come back next season more pissed off and tired of listening to critics and ball out. I think he's going to be great. I think he's going to be a top three fantasy player. I think he's going to put up monster numbers once again. And it wouldn't surprise me to see him have a different demeanor. He's tired of people bagging on him. I know he feels like the Dallas media likes to, but Tim McMahon, I think, is the guy that I don't know if that's correct or not. I don't even know if Tim McMahon is still in Dallas, but one of the Dallas writers, Luka is not happy with all season. I think all this negative stuff that's happened since the loss to Boston, he's not going to forget that. And I think the main thing we need to remember is Dallas was not supposed to be in the finals. They were not supposed to compete in the playoffs Like, you can't win with just Luka and Kyrie, but then, you know, a funny thing happened. Derek Lively, PJ Washington, and the other guy, Daniel Gafford, all showed up, and Dallas turned out to be pretty good, but they way out exceeded expectations this season, and the fact that everybody's bagging on them so hard is laughable to me.
I love that last part in there. I would like to see Luka have a Nikola Jokic style body change. I don't doubt his athleticism at all. Like, I mean, of course he's not like, you know, super quick or something like that, but like, he has strength, and you can't really buy strength. Like, that's something that you got to really earn through the weight room. And I just think he was born with it genetically. And so if he can shave off like 15, 20 pounds, really buy into the idea that Jokic did, which is, I'm going to beat these people up and down the floor. And there's a part to his game. Like, I think a lot of people almost don't even like to watch it. You know, it's beautiful. There's every reason to watch it, but it's Luka left, Luka right, you know, Luka this, Luka that. And it's even for teammates, I think at times, you know, it's like, okay, man, let's get this going a little bit. I think with Luka, losing 20 pounds would put his, you know, like his otherwise, you know, solid defensive play that we saw in the series prior to Boston, you know, that just is going to make life so much easier on him. And I don't think he'll lose any ability to bump guys or anything like that. I just think he's probably, if I had to guess, got to lay off some Bud Lights or some food. You know, he's maybe gotten away with it during his entire career and hasn't had to worry about that. And I think a lot of guys who play a physical game are like, you know, a lot of NBA players, they try to put on this muscle because it's super useful. You know, he's bumping guys off and nobody can get to anything that he's shooting because they just can't get through him. And so I wonder if that might be his takeaway. The ref stuff, yeah, like that's clearly a thing for him. And he's going to have to figure out a way to channel that better. I mean, guys are never going to stop arguing at the NBA level. But I think if you're ethical, there's a talk with it. I love the talk lately about ethical scoring. I think that's a great advancement in the narratives that we have in the league, which guys are out there trying to actually win and which guys are just trying to draw fouls. But like ethical arguing with refs, like that's a thing. Like if you're going to sit there and bitch about every call, you're going to lose down the road on calls. And we've seen that time and time again over the year. Talk to DeMarcus Cousins about that. Like the refs will absolutely ice you out if you are on them constantly. So he's going to have to get that one figured out. But yeah, I mean, we're talking about one of the game's great competitors here. And I really want to see him in the finals again. Like I really think, you know, if you go by the age old adage of you got to get there once and lose, that'll be good for them. I think this Dallas team is really, really set for the future. I mean, minus the fact that they're going to be losing probably Derek Jones Jr. because they can't really pay the guy. And I think Derek Jones Jr. did enough, albeit in the finals, he really disappeared. But like overall, I think a team would be like, yeah, I'll pay Derek Jones Jr. some, you know, double digit annual salary and be happy with that. So he's probably gone. Other than that, they've got the great big man core that they have. That big man core of Daniel Gafford, Derek Lively, and PJ Washington is probably as compelling as all but like maybe two or three teams in the league, I would say. I don't have that project worked out in my mind, but they're that good. And then you factor in that Kyrie has sort of revived his career in terms of being somebody that you can count on, that you can play next to if you're Luka Doncic, pardon me. I think they're just really in a good spot. So I really think that we could see him in the finals again. And I would like them to replay that series even, you know, with a Luka that's not taking chest injections and a Luka that's not mentally at that place that he was. I want to see a better Luka.
Let's also remember they went on a 16-2 run at the end of the season to climb into the fifth seed in the West. I think it was fifth. And they went 16-2 over an 18-game stretch. They just took people out. They came into the playoffs. They beat the Clippers. They beat Oklahoma City, which I don't think anybody thought was going to happen. And then they beat Minnesota. And up to that point, I didn't hear one person bitching about Luka Doncic. No one was complaining about the fact he always has the ball. Nobody was complaining about his defense. Nobody was saying jack about any of it. You know, then they get to the finals, which they weren't supposed to be there. And they hung in there, for a couple games, but they were outmatched. Boston was a better team. They just were. They had more depth, more well-rounded. And now suddenly Luka's defense is the worst thing anybody's ever seen. And he's a bad leader for the team. And like all this garbage, like, you didn't hear any of that until all these armchair quarterbacks and amateur hour, like New Year's Eve, come out and decide to watch the finals, watch basketball for the first time this year. And everybody has an opinion about how Lucas does.
Amateur hour New Year's Eve. I love that. What is that? Okay. Somebody who drinks their first time drinking.
They only go out once a year. It's for New Year's Eve.
And you can't take them anywhere, those people.
That's right.
Well, you know, like, it's really hard when the chips are against you, you know, or the chips are down or whatever. Like, it's one thing to play well, you know, like, flip it. If you're a Boston Celtics guy, like, I'm not even, like, singling him out for any reason whatsoever. Like, Peyton Pritchard played well all season. And, you know, we've talked about Peyton Pritchard. We'll talk about him in tomorrow's episode. But, the dude hits two, you know, three-quarter court shots. Like, yeah, we know he's good at them. The telecast told us that 5 million times. But, like, something about, hey, man, things are going really well. I think I could do anything right now. And then you flip that. It's like, man, we have not done well at all in this series. And trying to play under those circumstances, I mean, people like kind of wonder why I'll bag on certain defensive players so much. It's like the stress of losing every time down the floor because of a guy or because, you know, somebody can't defend. And this isn't about Luka, by the way. This is just a concept of like when the chips are down, it's really hard to play. Luka, as well as every other Dallas Maverick on the floor, looked worse than they'll ever probably look in the rest of their career. Cause that team, the Boston team, that is, they were really, really good and they present a lot of different challenges. So yeah, he caught the worst of it there and people are making way too much of it because again, like if you ask me who the best player in the league is, I think he's got to be in that conversation. Like, I don't think we can just go to Nikola Jokic and just say like, he's the guy, like just sort of like summarily without talking about some of these other players. Is Jokic the guy? Yeah. Jokic is my number one. Like he's still there. But it's close and Luka has command of the game that we just don't see other players have. So, you know, let's get him healthy. Let's get him, I don't know, maybe drink some Michelob Ultra.
He also needs some help, dude. I mean, he's Jaden Hardy and Dante Exum and Derrick Jones Jr. You said Derrick Jones Jr. was contributing enough, but I mean, if you look at his entire season, I had him in 30 deep, and I was relying on that guy a lot. And I mean, there he'd have one good game, and then like four or five bad ones. My favorite thing about, and most of everything he did was highlight dunks. That set the arena on fire and got everybody talking. And speaking of that, if you want to see one of the plays of the year, because I think Anthony Randolph may have at least the number one, if not the number one and two plays of the year, that the Mavericks had one where Luka was falling down and threw the ball over his shoulder. Kyrie Irving was on a fast break running down. He throws it up over his head. Behind him, and it goes over the outstretched arms of Walker Kessler. And then Derrick Jones Jr. comes in to finish it up with just a monster jam. When you look at that whole sequence, it's a pretty awesome play. Whether you like any of those players or not, it's pretty cool to see. But if you just Google NBA Player of the Year, it's always one of the first ones to pop up.
The talent of those two players, Luka Doncic and Kyrie Irving, it's really like unprecedented. I understand why Stan Van Gundy said this is the best backcourt of all time. He kind of walked it back a little bit, I think, in later telecasts. But it's two guys that theoretically can't be covered. I know Boston pretty much did it, but that foundation is in place for at least one more season. Kyrie has a player option the year after that. Luka would probably be a Mav for life. So you've got at least one more year that you get to run this team back. You're right about Derrick Jones. Like, he's a minimum player for them. And just the fact that he was able to hold up, not just be a guy that is like a major problem for your roster. The fact that he was just able to fulfill a role and have good moments. And there were times against Minnesota and throughout the playoffs that he hit key shots and he made key plays and you thought, man, where would they be without him? So I think it's a great time for them if they can find an upgrade at that position. I mean, they got guys like Josh Green, Jaden Hardy's got a long way to go. But like, if they can get one more really super compelling piece at the three, somebody that can play between 2, 3, and 4, whatever that would look like, that's going to be really, really exciting for the Dallas Mavericks. Maybe. I don't know. I don't know about that fit, but that, I'd certainly sign up to see how it looks because I think the guy's strong enough to defend a lot of NBA threes.
And I don't know.
He's probably going to be covering the three anyway. So
I don't know that PJ Washington, he was great this year. He had some big moments. He was terrible at times. I don't know if he's your long-term answer at power forward. But maybe he is. Maybe the fit is right. And, those guys only had a few months to work together, too. They didn't even really have time to get to know each other with the trade and all that. So be interesting to see.
If he can sit down in the corner and shoot threes, he's looking as good as anybody in that respect. But yeah, no, PJ Washington is a little bit of an enigma. And let's go ahead and let's get into all this good stuff, because Luka finished number 4 in both 8 and 9 cat. So finally really kind of cashed in on the hype. There's been talk about free throws and there's been talk about him being overdrafted because of the free throws. And, just like the value wasn't there for the name value. And a lot of people were like, I'm going to punt that stuff away. And that's good and fine. This was the year though, that, shooting 78.6% from the foul line on 8 attempts per game. He finally was, it's a good number. It's not killing you. And
the one year I did not bet a Scherzi on Luka's free throw percentage, he finally hit him.
And you bet a Scherzi every other time? And what did you have to do? Did you have to give somebody a Scherzi?
Yeah, I had to get online and order the stupid thing and have it delivered to their house $40 later. Come on, man.
It's shameful on a number of levels. A Scherzi? Come on. What is this, 2011? That's not okay. We talked a lot about Luka already and even in previous shows and throughout the playoffs, so I don't think we need to go deep into the fantasy analysis.
But I'm ranking Luka at 3. I'm drafting him at 2.
You are the Luka whisperer of all Luka whisperers, my friend. It's, there you have it right there. I don't know where I'm going to go. I really want to sit down and look at all of this stuff, so I'm not committing to anything here on air today. So, boo.
By the way, we only have one show left after this for these team breakdowns.
Yeah, I know.
So we've done 29 of them. Dude, it's a blur. I feel like
we've done 5. That's pretty crazy. Yeah, no, it's been fun. And this is how you get good at this stuff, folks, is you do the reps. Luka 3 for Doc. I don't know where I'll be. We'll check that out later on in a couple months. Kyrie finished in 27, or at 27, I should say. And he, and that was 8 cat, pardon me. It was 9 cat numbers, probably a little bit better if I had to guess. Nope, 28. So what do I know? Just 1.8 turnovers per game to Luka's 4, by the way. Not trying to shade there. Luka does a lot, so 4 is actually not too bad. But
dude, you don't have to worry about hurting my feelings. You can say anything you need to say.
Is this a safe space, Steve?
Yes, it is.
I did not know that.
I know that Luka has flaws.
I love it.
Let's talk about Kyrie for a second, because I also noticed that nobody gave him credit for being an incredible teammate this year and a man of no drama. There were no sideline shows. There were no Kyrie showing up in the news. He got hurt one time when Derek Lively fell on his legs. It would have paralyzed me for the rest of my life. Kyrie missed a couple weeks, and then he was right back. And he was, him and Luka were boys. Like, they're picking each other up off the floor. They're smiling, laughing, hyping each other up, having each other's back. And, you know, Kyrie gets a lot of stuff, and I get it. I used to be a guy that was like, no, thank you, Kyrie Irving.
You know, we were talking about this on the last show. Dallas would be a great NBA Hard Knocks team. I want to know more about Luka. I want to know more about, well, like, how did Kyrie get to that place where, like, legitimately throughout the playoffs, even losing against Boston, I mean, he's got like a lot of stuff, you know, from the past with Boston, and they just chanted his name the entire time and booed him and all that. And we would have liked to have seen, if you were a Dallas backer, like, Kyrie did more with the time that he was out there. You know, game 3, game 4, he was there, and then game 5, it all kind of just fell apart for everybody. But like, he kept his head, and he was like a good positive influence on his teammates. And, you know, just like, even if the ref didn't give him a call, I mean, he's still over there, the ref, he's working the refs the right way. It was really good to see everything you said. And then, you know, just in general,
you know, Brew, even after that series, he went over to the Boston bench, was hugging everybody. He was almost waving to the crowd. Like, it just seemed like he really has come a long way.
Yeah, I would love to get more background on that. I like redemption. Everybody should like redemption. You know, Kyrie's said and done some pretty stupid things, and now he's you know, saying and doing the right things, apparently. So it's just a good story, and I think it's a great basketball fit, which is something I didn't think I would be saying, but here we are saying it. And he finished with the top. Go ahead.
He also was never as good as I thought he should be. Like, he never really had that huge game or that big moment, because it seems like every other year there's like 4 or 5 games where Kyrie goes off for like 50 or 60 and just burns fantasy owners or helps one of them out immensely. I know Ryan Knauss beat me one year because Kyrie had like a 55-point game late in the year, but it didn't seem like he ever could really outshine Luka. And maybe that's something to work on this summer, is to have it more evenly distributed, because like you said, Kyrie's a top 30 guy when it feels like he should be. You know, if he's going to play the whole season and be this involved and be this happy, seems like he should be more like a top 15 guy.
And there might be some hidden value here. I mean, the name value of Kyrie Irving is always going to carry his draft day, you know, cost. But like, he did this top 30 season. He did it in 58 games. And by the way, it wasn't his fault. You know, I forgot who landed on his legs again off the top. You mentioned it earlier.
Derek Lively.
Yeah, it was a big, oh, that Green thing looked beast. Painful. And so, yeah, 58 games. Like, if Kyrie played 70 games, I mean, it's probably a back end of the first round kind of a season. So, really strong fantasy game. I mean, not breaking any news there, but like, it's
per game, he was 9 on Basketball Monster.
Yeah, like, I mean, I don't know. There's people might have fallen asleep a little bit with the Kyrie Irving stuff. Another one that's sort of under the radar. Daniel Gafford, I had Gafford ranked really high two seasons ago, and it just didn't happen. And so when he was getting going this season, I had that little like, oh, I'm happy I at least saw this at some point, but I didn't really go all in on Daniel Gafford this year. I was really concerned about his knees. The situation in Washington felt like it could implode at any point in time. And lo and behold, he kind of gets off the train at the right time and lands in Dallas, and they love him and they use him. And, you know, he fits this little two-headed monster with Derek Lively perfectly. And he's a perfect fit for Luka Doncic, pardon me. And that's great. Like, he's 11 points, 7.5 boards, 2.1 blocks, 0.9 steals, 72.5% field goal percentage, my Lord. You know, and doing this in 24.5 minutes per game. So this is probably something that, you know, we'll see similar types of numbers. I don't know if we'll see as good of numbers. I mean, these are really high numbers. Where are you taking Gafford next year?
I feel like he's a fourth round guy that you can get in the fifth or sixth round.
Yeah. That probably sums it up pretty well. That probably sums it up real well. I mean, there's issues, right? There's two centers. You know, they're going to split the load. Maybe that'll make things even more affordable.
Free throws
are an issue,
but then there's steals and blocks, and
there's a lot of good,
lots
there.
Of good stuff. Lots it's, of good stuff.
It's all good stuff. Derek Lively, we might as well just switch to him. He didn't have the season people wanted him to have, I think, and especially early on, it looked pretty good for him. And yeah, didn't play a whole lot of games, 55 games, so you know, only a 160 finish here for nine cat formats. So I mean, I don't think anybody's other than like he had this massively good season on a per game basis. He was 115 in nine cat leagues in 23.5 minutes. Blocks are good. Field goal percentage is even better than Gafford's, which, you know, speaks to something of a Luka effect there. But the seven boards, 9 points. I mean, numbers like that don't jump off the page. He doesn't hit threes. He steals at a good enough clip, but, like, you know, assists are low. We'll kind of counter that by saying there was a lot of great passing sequences for him, maybe not resulting in assists, but the short roll, he looked proficient. He hit a three in the finals and it looked pretty natural. Free throws, I'm curious what his postseason free throw percentage was, because he was kind of a hack a guy and only hit a hair over 50% on the year, and it felt like he hit a lot of clutch free throws for the Mavs this postseason.
75% for the season.
Yeah, it's like something.
Oh no, that's field goal. Never mind.
We got to be careful with that, because we've seen, like, Yusuf Nurkic, he had a 90% postseason, and I was
Lively was 51% from the line. I was looking at the wrong line.
Was that was the postseason number for Lively?
No, the regular season number was 51% free throw.
And the postseason?
75%.
Okay, yeah, that's I kind of felt like that he had a nice sizable bump. So,
and then in the playoffs, it felt like he was 100% field goal percentage.
Yeah, I had a great, so I guess, you know, great postseason, great season in general. I mean, he didn't play, obviously, but like, where do you go with Derek Lively in a draft this upcoming season?
I'd take him at the very end when I need a center and some block shots.
Okay. Yeah. It's that kind of interesting setup for the Dallas Mavs. Now, PJ Washington, this one's a little interesting. So he finishes the season very PJ Washington-like fashion, like, you know, late round finish, you know, top 115. But he got to Dallas. He was like a little tiny bit better, you know, just outside of the top 100 on a per game basis. Do you think things are better for him in Dallas than they were in Charlotte?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, and Dallas needs that guy.
I mean, looking at his Grant last Williams, month.
Grant Williams was not doing it. Who's the big guy that Maxi Kleber doesn't really do it? They need PJ Washington to get it done.
Yeah. I mean, interesting numbers. I mean, really numbers that jump off the page, like points, not so much, just over 12 in the last month of play, last 14 games for Dallas. But it gets good after that. 2.2 triples, 7 boards, just under 2 assists is not nothing there. 1.3 steals, 1.0 blocks. Where he was really not good is the fact that he's shooting mostly threes, 42.2% from the field, and then the free throws, 59.1% on just 1.6 per game. But like, if he could bump those percentages up somehow and get a little bit more diversity in his shot selection, I think, like, you know, he was a 90 per game rank in 9 cat where he's not turning the ball over at all. So that's got to be kind of kept in a context here. But like, you know, a little improvement here and there, maybe there's like a top 50 guy in here somehow. I don't want to say that that's the case, but you know, maybe.
Well, I mean, he gets a steal and a block and 2 threes a game and 6 rebounds. And his free throws, I don't know. I thought you said 50-something. I show him as 60, like 68 percent. So that's not good, but it's right around 70%. And he doesn't shoot enough of them that it should absolutely wipe out your team. So and I think now that he's going to have a whole summer to work with Dallas and play alongside Luka and Kyrie, I think he's going to have a lot of good passes coming his way. I mean, he could be a bit better this coming season than he was this year.
Yeah, and so I wonder if there'll be additional buzz with the postseason play and a lot of those high, you know, leverage moments where, you know, he's just drilling a three and the Dallas crowd goes wild, kind of a deal. The rest of the roster has got a lot of filler from a fantasy perspective. I don't know that we're getting excited about Josh Green anytime soon because of the lack of stats there, but he'll be somebody to watch. And then what do they do with this offseason? Do they add a piece and does that shake up fantasy values? I think that's the story.
They need a free agent scorer. That's not a point guard. So whether it be a shooting guard or a small forward, they need a high volume scorer, I think, to go along with these guys. Cause, and it wouldn't hurt if that person also played defense, but I feel like that's really where Dallas fell behind in Boston is Boston just had 5 or 6 really great players, that they were running out there all at the same time. And, you know, Dallas is running Josh Green or Dante Exum or Tim Hardaway Jr., like just guys that really aren't that great. And PJ Washington versus Jason Tatum, like it's not close. So there's places for improvement. I think they just need to find a good, solid free agent and add him to the mix.
Yeah, you can't have just 2 scorers in this at the NBA Finals level, because if you just happen to have a matchup that takes one of them off the table, then it gets really ugly really fast. So Dallas, go add yourself a big-time scorer, and then let's see you in the Finals again. Tomorrow, we're going to be finishing up our season and review series with the Boston Celtics, so that's awesome. Right now we are in the middle of draft season and free agency season for NBA, but we're also in the middle of the NFL draft guide season. So if you like what you're hearing and if you want to support everything we're all about here at Sports Ethos, consider getting an all sport fantasy pass. It gives you all of the sports, all of the fantasy passes. It gives you early access to the Brewski 150. It also gives you a really low price. Like, we're talking basically the same price as the NBA fantasy pass with a couple extra dollars. And if you keep that thing active, you keep that price for life as these rates go up, you know, inflation and all of that, you know, you're going to get locked in at a great rate. So take a look at that. I want to give a big thank you to Steve. I want to give a big thank you to producer Andre Lemos and a big thank you to you guys as the listeners. Send us feedback, you know, at Aaron Brewski, at Dr. A, D-O-C-K-T-O-R-A. at Aaron Bruski, AaronBruski. Send it over to Ethos Fantasy NBA if you want. Follow that feed for all of the blurbs, especially with free agency coming up. You're going to want to keep an eye on all of that. It's the best free content that you can find. This has been Fantasy NBA Today, presented by Bet Online, a sports ethos presentation. Until next time, ladies and gentlemen, be well.